Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today is masterclass lesson number 7, which means we have done 6 masterclass lessons prior to this one, which you can certainly go back and check out, and I highly recommend you do that because we've covered a lot of ground to this point, and today we're going to cover even more ground. This one is so important, in fact, that we titled it A Huge Deficiency in the Suburban American Soccer Player. Ooh, the Suburban American Soccer Player. That conjures up a whole lot of imagery in my mind, as I'm sure in yours. But the central point of this one is about pickup games and pickup culture and pickup soccer. Yes, you've heard it a million times here in the mainstream soccer media or with other American soccer voices as to the importance of pickup games. But again, so much of the narrative is lacking in substance. It's lacking in richness and nuance. And that's what we hope to offer you in this episode. So I'm joined once more by my co-host, Benny Rogers, and we're going to dive into pickup culture, why it's important, what you can do about it, and if you neglect it, what does that mean for you and your kids, if you're a parent here, or if you're a coach, what does it mean for your soccer players, and what you can advise them to actually go ahead and do. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and jump into this episode. As always, remember, parents, you can go to 343masterclass.com and get all the lessons and all the premium lessons that dive way further deep than these series of podcast episodes that we're doing. We have a whole bunch of video for you. We have a whole bunch of ways you can train your eye to discern what is a good coach from a great coach, from a mediocre coach, from a coach that you should run for the hills for, and also how you can train your son or daughter yourself, or at least show them the videos of what it is that they can be doing by themselves to elevate their game and catch up to those kids that might be ahead of them, and or increase the gap with those kids that are competing with them or behind them. So parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go. And as always, coaches, we've got you covered up, down, left, right, A through Z with the 343coaching.com premium program. If you're not ready to jump into the premium program itself, which is incredible, it has helped hundreds and thousands of coaches here in the American soccer environment catapult their careers and catapult their teams and catapult their individual players to levels that, look, I'm being straight with you, that I believe would never have happened if not for the program. I know that's a little bit out there. I know that's might ruffle a few feathers, but a lot of testimonials kind of give me that fortitude and confidence in being able to say that. So if you're not ready for the premium program, cool. Go over there, pick up the free program itself. It gives you a little bit of a taste, a little bit of a flavor. There are 7 free lessons for you if you sign up. So all of that is at 343coaching.com. And if you happen to be coaching the little ones in the 7-versus-7 environment, not to fret, go to 7v7coaching.com and there is a program for you as well. All right, everybody, here we go with pickup games, pickup culture, and what is lacking in the suburban American soccer environment. Enjoy and feel free to reach out to me if you like, Gary at 343.com. Here we go. All right. Let her rip, Ben.
Let's get right into it. Today we're chatting about a huge deficiency in the suburban American soccer player. This is the next lesson of the 343 masterclass that we're getting into today. I think it's well known that across the globe, pickup soccer is woven into the fabric of player development. And this is something that's extremely lacking here in the U.S. We can maybe even relate that as to why the U.S. hasn't had much success on the international stage. If you look at the best players in the world, all of them swear by the streets, and they say that that's where they learn most of their craft, right? A quote from Ronaldo that I wrote down, "The small playing area helped me improve my close control. And whenever I played futsal, I felt free. If it wasn't for futsal, I wouldn't be the player I am today." You also have Wayne Rooney, Manchester United legend. He says, "I've always played on the streets with friends and still do now and again when I get the time. That is where I learned to play football. There was a lot of help along the way from the academy at Everton, but the majority of my football was learnt on the streets." So, Gary, I mean, you can find hundreds of examples of the top players in the world and how they swear by the streets and they say that that's where they learned everything. So why do you think that, you know, this pickup culture that exists everywhere else in the world, why is it so beneficial to a player's development?
Whole bunch of things. One, it's fun. Two, I mean, which is related to one, is there's no adult supervision. So no coaches to impress, no coaches to stop and start the game, no coaches to tell you what to be doing, what not to be doing. So there's a tremendous amount of freedom associated with pickup soccer, and that helps develop creativity to a large degree. Of course, people are going to hop on that comment right there and say, see, the coaches should let kids play. And that's just not true. Let's not conflate two things. I'm just giving you a lot of the positives of pickup soccer at the moment. The other thing that's quite important is in pickup soccer, pickup culture, the ages are completely mixed. So if you have, say, a big, fast, strong kid who scores all the goals at age, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12, the man child here in the United States, well, that man child might be going to pickup games where he's mixed in with 15-year-olds or 18-year-olds or somebody where he can't bully in any way. You know, he's being bullied at that point. So that man child is actually learning to play football a lot better than if it was just in the structured club competitive game where they just kick it up to him and he just runs by everybody. He's not able to do that in the pickup game anymore. So he's going to have to develop all these other skills. And plus, he's not going to be able to verbally be the leader on the field either. He is going to be little man in the pickup game. So that also helps that player. And like that, there's countless examples, you know, why it's beneficial to be in a mixed age scenario. Because if you are, say, one of the older kids in a pickup game, then the roles are reversed. You get to develop a lot of leadership skills that you don't necessarily do in your club environment or in your structured environment. I mean, we can rattle off endless positive things, Benny. The other one that I think is quite vital is you get a lot more touches, generally speaking. You get a lot of rapid fire competition because the games can end in 1 minute. Say if it's a first to one goal sort of pickup game sort of environment, you could be on the field. You could have been waiting an entire hour to play. And then finally your team gets to play. And in 30 seconds, you get scored on, get the fuck off the field again. So it develops you from a psychological perspective in the competitive environment as well, because if you don't want that to happen to you and you know that you're completely outmatched, now you start thinking tactically also. You're like, oh man, we're up against the best team in the area here in the pickup game. They have a badass team. They've been playing 10 games in a row and they won all 10 games in a row. Now all of a sudden, you've been game planning with your other kids on your team to figure it out, how to bunker maybe and not let them score and try to do a counterattack. Like, again, the positives are endless, Ben. But I think the one that the Americans who read about this stuff most latch onto is only the creativity thing. Oh, you get to, you know, do step overs and fancy things. And they see all these little highlights with the futsal and that's what they latch onto. And that's just a tiny, tiny, tiny sliver of the benefits of pickup.
Yeah, in terms of the competitive nature, would you agree, Gary? It's like the best feeling ever. You mentioned the team that has won 10 games in a row and your team comes on and you dethrone them. There's no better feeling in street pickup football.
It's the best, man. It's the best. And the amount of shit talking that happens back and forth. And again, we're talking about players who may be ranging from 8 years of age to 25 years of age. There might be a freaking adult in there playing in the pickup game.
Yeah, 100%. Even for me, Gary, I'll share one experience. I went to a Catholic school for 9 years. And every single day, I was the only kid in my class of 35 that played soccer. But somehow I recruited all of my buddies to play pickup games during lunch every single day. And we had that going for 3 years. One of the goals would be like the nuns, they lived on campus, right? And they had like a garage right there. So one of the goals was their garage. And the other goal was across the way. It was like a fence that was covering the air conditioner. And we had it going every single day, 3 years in a Catholic school environment. And yeah, countless shit talking to each other after the games before class. We'd be fighting. No, we won today. No, you didn't. Fuck you. In a Catholic school environment, you know. So I'm not advocating for that, for little kids to do that. But, you know, that was what got me to get, you know, the love of futsal and the love of pickup soccer. You know, I love those moments.
Yeah, it's the best, man. And for the record, I went to Christian school in elementary school and junior high, and then I went to a Catholic high school as well, all 4 years, Catholic high school, man. So that's my upbringing. And look at our potty mouths as a result. But no, man, the pickup stuff is so versatile, because you could be playing 2v2, 3v3, 4v4, 7v7. The numbers could be all over the map. And so you get exposure to all of that too. And the goals don't have to... See, here in the States, man, here in the States, dude, oh, we should do futsal. That'll develop us. And what they have in mind in futsal is like an organized, I don't know, basketball court type thing, or gym or hockey type thing, where you actually have goals, you know, and they're of a certain dimension, and you have turf, or maybe it's a hardwood floor, but it's all very clean, if you know what I mean. And the pickup soccer that the all-time greats are more thinking about and have experienced more, and that we're talking about also, is not necessarily a clean environment. It could be just a random patch of grass that has a whole bunch of potholes in them. There are no goals. You make your own goals by putting two shoes, you know, 3 feet apart. There is no net in the goal. Or you might be using a trash can as a goal, where, hey, you have to hit the trash can. That's what you have to do. So you get what I'm saying here, right? Here in the US, they still don't get it. They want to have a controlled sort of environment where they are even thinking about like futsal, age appropriate futsal. Like if you're U10, you're playing against other U10s or with the other U10s. They don't have the mixture of ages. And I think the benefit comes from the randomness of it all, not the organization of it all.
Yeah, I think people use that as an excuse, Gary. It's like, oh, we don't have goals, or we don't have the proper equipment. But like you just mentioned, I mean, I can recall numerous occasions where we just go to a basketball court and the goal was literally, you have to hit the pole. And yeah, it increases that. You have to have sick accuracy, otherwise you're not scoring a goal. You know, so I think people use that as an excuse, like, oh, there's no pickup in my area, or nobody wants to play. But I mean, there is a huge culture of people that want to play, that do play. And, you know, you just have to go do the work and find it. Or even if you live in an area where, you know, people aren't playing that much, then take it upon yourself and, you know, hit up your buddies from your team. Or, you know, if you're a parent, tell the other parents on your kid's club team, hey, let's take them to the park and let's let them play. You know, if you want to play, there's opportunities too. But I think people use that as an excuse, especially here in the States, like, oh, nobody really plays here that much.
Yeah, something's better than nothing. Even if it has to be parents who organize it for their kids, fine. Organize it for your kids. Better than, it's not the organic thing that we're talking about, but it's better than nothing. Another thing, you just reminded me of something, playing on the basketball court and having to hit the pole to score. We also had another rule that, say you're shooting on goal and you need to hit the pole and you miss the pole, obviously the ball is going to go really far away, you know, a certain distance. Whoever shoots it has to go and fetch it. And in the meantime, there's another ball that's put into play. So your team is down a player while you're fetching your shot that you missed. So there's an added pressure not to miss. And then there's a tactical component that comes into play for both teams. Like, one team is a man down, the other team is a man up. How does one take advantage of it? And how does one prevent from being taken advantage of and stalling until your teammate gets back on board? And many times, sometimes there'll be a turnover, and there'll be a second shot on goal and a second miss. And now your team is two men down. It's amazing, Benny. Incredible.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because about 3 years back, I attended a session with Brian, and he was having, you know, all his former players come just for like a little informal session. And at the end of the session, he set up like a little 3v3 field with puck goals. And he had these guys put the balls all around the grid. And the same thing that you just said, if you miss, you sprint your ass to go get it. And meanwhile, the team's up on a counterattack. And Gary, 10, 15 minutes in, these guys are gassed because, you know, they don't want their team to be down, so they're sprinting. So, and I even run that session out with my teams, and they love it. So for coaches, I mean, that's a great tool to kind of replicate the pickup environment within your sessions if you have extra time.
No, 100%. You can do little tournaments for your teams, and that could be nice culture building exercise, a nice fun little thing to do. And unsuspectingly so, the kids are learning a whole bunch of things by playing that game.
So Gary, in my travels to Europe, I got the opportunity to live in London for 3 months. And, you know, I visited Denmark, Barcelona, Paris, every single country that I went to, Gary, you know, you go for a 10-minute walk and you're going to see at least three courts or three fields, and nonstop, there's always people playing. So why do you think that's not happening here in the States? Obviously, we don't have the same futsal courts or pitches that they have, but, you know, there's still opportunities to play. So is it just more so like that's the culture out there and that's their life and we just don't have that here? It doesn't exist here yet? Or what do you think it is? I mean, you've been in Europe a lot too, so I'm sure you've seen that as well.
Yeah, it's a common, and especially in Argentina, when you fly over in Argentina and you're looking out the window, you know how you look out the window of an airplane, you see 5v5, right? Fútbol cinco, they call it. 5v5 courts sprawled out all over the place. I mean, from an airplane's vantage point, you can see all the little patches dotting the landscape. But there's a couple of things. Number one is I think the layout of cities matters. In many respects, here in the United States, especially in Southern California, it seems, I don't know, the way that they structure neighborhoods, the way that they structure residential real estate, it's very boring. There aren't many parks available. And the parks that are available are also structured in such a manner that it's not amenable to what we're talking about. And they're very sparse, meaning you have to travel a fairly large distance to get from one park to another, to another, to another. And so that doesn't help, certainly. The other thing is what you said, of course, the cultural component, because if it was in the DNA of the vast majority of the suburban soccer population, then the suburban soccer population itself or the real estate developers themselves would say, oh, okay, let's put up, instead of a basketball court, you know, one of these 5v5 soccer courts. Or in addition to the basketball court, you put the little soccer 5v5 locations or more little patches of grass littered throughout the suburban environment. But it doesn't help, Ben, right here in the States, the way that things are laid out. Solutions to that, I think we already touched on it. It's the kids can all just gather in a little, whatever patch is available, or even in the streets somehow. And you've seen all the electric bicycle craze that's been ramping up and accelerating. So there's a lot more mobility for younger kids now to get around. They don't need a ride from somebody. They can just take their electric bicycle to wherever it is that everybody's congregating and play there. The other thing that would be awesome is if the schools got a little bit involved, the elementary schools, the junior high schools, middle schools, high schools, and made things more accessible instead of closing the gates and not permitting anybody on the premises. But I think that's a little bit far-fetched because how everything is so tightly regulated and how everybody has a stick up their ass and not allowing people to have fun or use any sort of fields or utilities at all. I'm sure you've seen countless signs, even in public parks, no X, Y, or Z allowed. It's like you can barely do anything. And sometimes you'll even show up to a public park and maybe you will lay out some pug goals and start playing. And, you know, it'll be fine, but maybe the 100th time you do it, maybe the park maintenance people roll up and say, hey, you can't be doing that here or something. It's bananas.
Yeah, during COVID, I would organize like a little pickup session at the local park by my house. And, you know, we got away with about 5-6 sessions. But then exactly what you just said, on the 8th session, the park ranger came up to us and said, hey, what are you guys doing? You can't be here. So, you know, there's definitely examples of that out there.
Yeah, the park guy that was at the location where we would always play, which was across the street from my childhood home, he ended up being pretty chill. He's like, hey guys, like, look, you effed up this patch of grass over here playing. Why don't you let this patch of grass rest and go play on that patch of grass over there? So it was kind of like a farming sort of thing. We'd jack up one little area and then go move the game to another area, then move the game to another area and recycle through, you know, and by the time we've gone through four areas, the original one has already recovered and it has nice green patch of grass all over again. So I get it, you know, from a damage perspective, especially if you're wearing cleats and it's natural grass, fine, but something has to be done. And I think some nonprofits and some companies have attempted to do certain things, but I don't know the degree of success that they've had. I think it's very isolated pockets where it's worked, and the vast majority of the time it doesn't work. And again, money comes into play, because if you're an organization, nonprofit or for-profit that wants to solve this problem, it costs money. Benny, as you know, it costs startup money, it costs maintenance money, it costs staffing money, it costs all kinds of money. And where's that money going to come from? So again, we have to go resort back to some sort of pay-to-play feature, where maybe you have a league that you form or something of that nature. And during certain blocks of time, it's pay-to-play. And maybe certain during a smaller block of time, it's free play. But it's tough, man. Everything is so commercialized here in the States, and it needs to be, because you have to have revenue to make this a reality.
Yeah. I think slowly but surely, you know, U.S. soccer is starting to come around. I recently visited my dad's elementary school in Los Angeles, downtown Los Angeles, and I hadn't been there in 5 years. And when I walked on the campus, like a beautiful futsal court that I guess LAFC had put in money to. So I think we're starting to see, you know, some clubs invest money into those neighborhoods to try and get the kids to play. And so I think we're slowly coming around, but we're far behind our counterparts in the rest of the world.
Ben, you're very optimistic to think that U.S. soccer or these MLS franchises are going to solve this problem and are doing it from a benevolence point of view. They don't give a shit. I'm telling you, they don't give a shit. This is going to have to be a grassroots movement. All U.S. soccer / MLS cares about is the preservation and expansion of their power and the centralization of their power. They don't give a fuck, okay, about making the game more accessible to more people or more demographics at all. Any little thing that you see, such as you described, that's just a token little project so that they can write a press release and continue writing press releases saying, look at what we're doing for the community. We're awesome, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They don't care, Benny, I'm telling you. And this also reminds me of when the U.S. Soccer Development Academy launched in 2007. During those initial years, they also came up with a program, a futsal program. Oh, all the development academies have to participate in a futsal program, and they would have like a futsal tournament sort of thing twice a year, three times. I don't remember how frequently it was. But yeah, they had this bright idea. Oh, the Brazilians and the Europeans and their Argentinians, they all play futsal. That's what we should be doing too. And you know, the media and the public was saying, yeah, this is the difference maker. We should have this program. And so they created this sort of thing. And it's just a joke, Benny. You had just the academy teams kind of make little seven-a-side teams within themselves, and they would play amongst themselves a few times a year. And that would be the extent of the program. It wasn't really, let's play futsal every single day of the week or every single training session or make the futsal courts available to the entire public. Had nothing to do with that. It's kind of just some PR sort of stunt, frankly speaking. If it wasn't a PR stunt, then they're outrageously naive to think that doing this a few times a year makes any sort of impact at all in the development of a player. Hilarious. The first time I saw it, I'm like, this is a complete joke. This is hilarious. And folks here on social media and the journalists are saying, oh, look how progressive and awesome U.S. soccer is and MLS is. We're getting on board. We understand what the problem is. We're creating this whole futsal thing. What a joke.
Would you say that then it wouldn't be beneficial for a player to only be playing once or twice a week? I mean, the pros that swear by futsal, these guys are out there every single day in their childhood.
If you do it once or twice a week, that's amazing. But I'm just saying what U.S. soccer / MLS did was not that at all. That was like two or three times a year he got together and just played.
Right. No, what I was going to say, Gary, another big problem that, you know, the whole world is facing is that, okay, think about all these former pros that when they were kids, they didn't have the distractions of being on their phone or playing video games. Their way of fun was to go out in the streets and play the game. Now it's like, if a kid has a choice between playing Fortnite or going to play pickup, they're probably going to choose that. You know what I mean? So you think the level of soccer is going to continue to go down, or is it going down?
Well, a few things. There has been a trend in professional soccer for the past decade. And don't take it from me again, take it from the biggest minds in the game, you know, the biggest coaches in the game, biggest sporting directors in the game. They've been on record, just as I'm going to go right now and speak on it, is there aren't that many creative players anymore. They're all big, fast, strong robots. There are no more 10s, as they say in global football. You know, that super creative attacking midfielder that just creates something out of nothing and creates magic out of nothing. 15 plus years ago, there were a lot of those players. Like every club ever wanted one of those guys, at least on their roster. And that was the quarterback. That was the playmaker. That was the difference maker. And now, no, that guy has been supplanted by somebody who can run 13 kilometers per game, somebody who can tackle very well, somebody who can jump high and head the ball, somebody, the physical player profile, Benny. So that also, in many respects, is a consequence to less and less players playing pickup soccer and developing in the pickup soccer realm. In Europe in particular, there's a lot of criticism being thrown around that everything has been so professionalized. So all the players are in pro academies, and that is where they get their training. And when they're done with their training at the professional academies, where they teach them the tactics and how to pass and all the technical sort of things, they don't play after that. That is the extent of their playing. They don't play anymore. So it's been decaying and degrading. I will say, on an optimistic front, if you're listening to this show, if your kid actually does do these things, then it's that much easier to stand out because you're going to have that much more of an advantage because there's fewer players doing it.
Is it safe to correlate the lack of success in the U.S. on the global stage because of the lack of pickup culture here? Because obviously the U.S. has never won a World Cup. You know, Brazil has had a lot of success. Argentina, the countries that seem to, you know, play the most pickup soccer. Can you safely correlate that?
So the first thing that comes to mind, which is a reality that is not spoken about here much, and frankly, by design, there is a huge population here in the United States that does play pickup, and that is the Latino / immigrant cultures. And the most abundant of those is the Mexican Americans here in the United States. They do play pickup. Firstly, we were talking about city layouts, the suburban city layouts here in the United States making it difficult. Well, at least from our experience, from my experience, many in the Mexican-American demographic or the first-generation immigrants here are not in the posh suburban residential areas, the suburban areas. And where they actually live, there are a lot of parks because it's very old where they're at. There are a lot of parks. There are a lot of streets and cul-de-sacs and little nooks and crannies where you can play, and they're not very far apart, and they do play. And I know from personal experience with the countless players that we've had and the countless players that we've engaged with, as kids, they would play with their uncles and brothers and neighborhood kids, and their dads would take them. And there is a pickup culture here, but it's from a demographic that is not elevated. It's from a demographic that is disenfranchised. It is from a demographic that can't afford the club soccer that exists here in the States. And if you don't get into that club soccer circuit, then you're never platformed, you're never elevated, you're invisible. And then you're in this vicious cycle where you never progress and ultimately you don't get selected to, say, the national teams, which is the origin of your question as to why we aren't successful on the international stage. And even of the rare few who survive that and do make it into the competitive club environment, and maybe even get into MLS academies or what have you, they don't make it because the folks making the decisions here, the decision makers, whether it be the sporting directors or the coaches that are selected or the club presidents or the academy coaches or whatever, they don't like that type of player profile. They like the player profile, which is big, fast, and strong, and not this creative, technically very competent, intelligent player. They want the guy who will win the bone-crunching tackles here. They want the Weston McKinneys. They don't want, you know, the Andres Iniestas in here. They will pick Weston McKinney 10 times out of 10 and start Weston McKinney 10 times out of 10 over the Andres Iniesta analog in the academy games, for the youth national teams, for MLS contracts, or for MLS playing time, for the senior men's national team. So there's this other filter that exists, Ben, whereby the suburban soccer player is the one who ultimately gets to the top. And yeah, once you get to the top on the senior men's national team, you're playing against the French national team, the Brazilians, the Argentinians, you name it, who don't have those filters. and they do get the creative types, and they do get the pick up, the guys with a history of pickup soccer on the team. So there's that component. But I will say, if it was more accessible in the suburban environments, then maybe that player profile, which I described, which I am not fond of, would be playing more pickup and they would get it even better. The other thing to answer your question is, we have historically been not very successful at the international stage because we didn't have players playing overseas and in Europe in large numbers. And now, since 2018, since we led the mass exodus overseas and everybody followed overseas, we have our senior men's national team littered with European player experience, players that left the country and developed overseas, or maybe never were even in the American soccer environment to begin with. They are just Americans who were raised overseas because they were either born overseas or they moved overseas at a very early age because of their parents' work situation or whatever the case may be. And now we have those players on the senior men's national team, and now we're doing a little bit better. But if we're relying on the domestic system to produce top quality professionals, you're going to be waiting a very, very long time if it ever happens, which I'm very doubtful of.
Yeah. So what you're saying, Gary, is that these types of players, these creative players, they do exist here in the States, but they're just not getting elevated. That kind of what
you're saying? Yeah, 100%, Ben. But let me repeat something, because I know the retorts. I know the position of the other side better than they know it. They'll say, oh, well, who are these players, Gary? Name some names. Well, if I name names, you'll say, who the fuck is that? And you'll think like, that's a nobody. Well, yeah, duh, it's a nobody. They weren't elevated. That's why you don't know who the fuck they are.
Yeah. So, I mean, think about how many Sergio Busquets type players or Iniesta type players that have fallen through the cracks of American soccer because they weren't elevated.
100%. And I like to say, canyons. They fall through the canyons of American soccer, not the cracks, because the cracks communicate, oh, we kind of get everybody, but there's, you know, some fall through the cracks, these little things. No, it's freaking the Grand Canyon. The best are stuck at the bottom of the Grand Canyon and not picked up.
I like that analogy, the canyons. So Gary, you've worked with countless players, seen them go through the entire cycle from, you know, the early sub ages all the way into the pro circuit. Without naming names, can you think of any players who they were heavily influenced by playing on the streets, maybe before they even got to Brian's teams? Or are there any players like that?
I think the vast majority, if you want to focus in on Brian's famous team, okay, I think the vast majority of them played pickup and played on the streets at a very, very early age. So by the time they got to him, at age 9 or 10, whenever it was, they already had that street soccer experience. Because maybe they had older brothers who played football, whatever the case may be, or the dad or whoever, they were playing in the parks, they were playing in the streets, and they had a love affair with the ball. And so Brian had decent material already from the get-go. But let's be very careful here, because like Brian's team, like Brian's players, here in Southern California in particular, there are countless teams with that type of good/great player material as well. But they kind of go to waste. And I'm being sincere and frank here. I know Brian's my brother, and I'm biased for sure in many respects, but not in this. If they weren't on Brian's team, they were kind of in trouble because they didn't get that sort of refinement that you need once you get to the team environment. You have a lot of raw skill, but it's raw. And now all of a sudden you have to polish it and clean it up. And I think the players that Brian got had that benefit because of the training that Brian provided and all the experience that Brian provided from age 8 up to age 17, 18, until they graduated and became professionals.
Something else that you mentioned in the lesson is this term of the soft suburban culture, and how it seems that the best players in the world, they don't come from soft, pampered environments. They come from areas of struggle, and they have to, you know, kind of earn every inch. Can you expand a little bit for me on what you mean by soft suburban culture?
Ben, there's a book that could be written on this stuff, okay? And I mean, there's a broader societal element to all of this, as we see it has been happening in our country, especially in the past decade. And now the pendulum seems to be swinging back the other way, thank God, in a more non-soft, pampery sort of direction. But that aside, I don't know. Let's see. Maybe I'll just zoom in on one thing. You've heard the term helicopter parent, right? So there seems to be a lot of helicopter parenting going on, particularly in the competitive club circuit. And what that means to me, what I see, is they don't want the kids to quote unquote fail. They want the kids' confidence to always be nurtured and high, and which is great, but the way they want to go about it is not letting the kids suffer in any way. And for example, the kid shouldn't be on the bench for an entire game. Sometimes a kid should be on the bench the entire game. Or they don't want the kid to be benched at all. Well, sometimes the kid needs to be benched, even if he is the best player on the team. They demand the kid to be played in different positions. Oh, my kid should be playing a striker. He can score a lot of goals, you know, and the coach will kind of bow down sometimes and say, oh, okay, yeah, let's go ahead and do that, because they don't want to offend the parent, because the parent is paying money to the club, and the club pays the fees to the coach. So the coach will be open and accommodating to the parent's demands or needs. And so the next thing you know, the kid is basically never having to work for much and earn very much. And it goes to the trophy culture too, Benny, where eighth place gets a trophy. We all know this. We've all heard the cliche, but it's been true forever. The other thing that's really interesting, it's linked to promotion relegation. Maybe that's the next thing that you're going to talk about. I don't know. Is without promotion relegation, there's no consequences for sucking ass. So you can suck ass the entire season and you're still in the same circuit and it's still the same coach and it's all good. I'll see you next season. We'll give it a go next season, guys. So I don't know. That's what comes to mind, Ben.
Yeah. So I think it's safe to say that these types of players who come from, like you said, helicopter parents and this pampered, soft environment, they really don't. I'm sure there's a few outlier cases, but they don't have a high probability of making it far in football.
I would say that's true, especially if the kid has that pampering and is from that household culture, and they are the best player on their team, youth team, you're in really big trouble, because once you go up levels and all of a sudden the other players are just as good, if not better than you, and now the bench riding gets introduced, you can't handle it. You are not resilient to it. And your parents have always been telling you it's somebody else's fault. Oh, it's the coach's fault. It's the club's fault. You're actually better than that kid and you should be playing, or you should be the left winger. That left winger sucks. Chris sucks. You know, he should be benched and you should be playing. So it's never, you're never looking at yourself as the reason for your failures. That is a big problem, Benny. Big, big problem.
Yeah, we talked about in the last episode, Gary, about the dark arts of football. And I think the pickup culture is a good place to experience that and to learn that. So besides the technical aspect of the development in futsal or pickup, like for you personally, Gary, when you were a kid, what kind of dark arts did you learn playing pickup with your friends? Or
everything, Benny. All the dark arts. Grabbing the shirt. You know, have you ever seen... Well, now there's VAR, okay, which also pussifies the sport more with VAR. And here the Americans are like, oh yeah, VAR is awesome. Follow the rules. We'll video review your ass for any sort of things that are going on the field. Again, makes the sport softer. And so one of the dark arts, Ben, is like in a corner kick or in any sort of scenario, holding on to the opponent by their jersey, but you do it in such a way that the referee can't see it. So imagine that you guys are facing where the referee is. What you would do to grab the guy's shirt is you wrap your arm around your back, yeah, and grab the guy. So even if the referee's looking at you, they don't see you grabbing the guy because your arm is behind your back and you're grabbing the guy. So, I mean, there's just countless sort of things that you can do and frankly should be doing. And these are the sorts of things that happen in pickup games. Also, just quote unquote cheating your... like doing everything you possibly can to win the game.
1,000%, because, you know, you want to stay on the court, otherwise you're off for an hour.
Yeah, no, 100%, dude. Whatever it takes, man. And it's hilarious. One of the biggest transgressors that's the most famous in international football is like Luis Suarez, infamously, you know, bit the Italian player. What was his name? Chiellini? I don't know if it was Chiellini or not, but just straight up bit the guy, you know, a la Mike Tyson sort of thing. And oh my God, everybody had a cow. Yeah. Is it bad? Yes, it's bad. Okay. Of course. But it just gives you an insight into the competitive fire, the passion, the abandonment of what is considered civilized behavior. You know, the animal instinct come out, you know, all those sorts of metaphors to see what is burning inside of a player. And yes, we all want to point to Messi as the role model. Oh, well, look at Messi. He doesn't dive. Or look at Messi. He doesn't do those sorts of antics and something. Look, in general, yes. But don't make the mistake of thinking that Messi is some naive angel little kid, because there's countless stories of the son of a bitch that he is, a la Michael Jordan as well. I don't know if you remember that famous goal that he scored. Was it against Chelsea? I don't even remember the game anymore, but they scored and he and Dani Alves are running to the corner flag and he just kicks the shit out of the microphone that's on the ground. Like, you're literally damaging property at that point, but they don't care. Fuck it. I'm going to kick the shit out of the mic.
Yeah, it was badass to see Messi against the Netherlands in this past World Cup, because you kind of saw that come out of him a little bit too. No?
Totally. And same with Paredes. When Paredes rocketed the ball into the Dutch bench and the Dutch bench kind of cleared out and went after him. Amazing. Amazing. And it's all psychological warfare, you know, for the reason for doing that.
And you bring up Suarez. The thing that comes to me about Suarez, amazing play in the World Cup when he saves the ball with his hand, gets a red card and the team wins. You know, that just goes to show it's good. And so many people took offense to that, Gary, like, oh, this guy's cheating.
Cheating, unsportsmanlike. I get it all. I get it all. I just disagree with you. I disagree. Fine. He'll take the arrows for it, but that is showing you street soccer 101. You know how many times in a pickup game, they had a counterattack and they're definitely going to score. I literally became a goalkeeper. I dove and saved a shot with my hand and everybody goes crazy, you know, over that. But hey, you have to play on. Like, you didn't score the goal. Like, they can't just say, oh, we scored the goal. Who's next? No, like, I'm sorry. The ball didn't go in. Street rules.
Whatever it takes to win. And then that's what you learn on the streets. And honestly, too, I mean, it makes you have thick skin. Because I can remember, you know, I was a little man at one point going to play with Danny and all of his teammates. And you and Brian would be there clowning on me if I made a mistake. You have to be tough in those games. If you're soft, you're going to get eaten alive.
It's really weird, dude. It seems like the suburban American soccer culture here, the one that controls the game, the monoculture that controls the game, the primary target demographic of Major League Soccer, it's kind of like they want to make it, I don't know, like golf, or they want to make it like tennis, you know, where everybody is wearing white gloves and is all proper and you've got a clubhouse and there's a butler, you know, who says, would you like a rag, sir? Or I don't know. I get this image of the Queen of England, you know, dressing up and being all proper with their utensils and, you know, what do you eat first? What do you eat second? How do you properly drink a cup of tea? And how do you put the teacup back down on the ground? That's the primary demographic here in the US, Ben. That's what it reminds me of. They want the athletes, they want the clubs, they want everybody to kind of like behave in that way. And if you veer off that sort of English proper, you know, sort of mannerism, it's like, oh my God, what a thug, or what an ass, or what a dick, or he should be kicked out of the game for life, or oh, look at him complain, getting in the referee's face, like, terrible, give him a 3-game suspension for talking to the referee or complaining to the referee. What are we talking about? Look, I respect referees too, 100%, but sport is sport as well, man. Or have we forgotten what it was like, you know, in the NBA during the 80s and 90s? And I don't even know if maybe even the early 2000s probably was the last moment where it was like hardcore. It was badass. And all of a sudden the NBA is soft as shit. And I don't know if you saw a recent report that the NBA ratings have tanked like crazy recently. And yeah, man, I don't know. I have not even compelled to watch the NBA anymore. And I was kind of really into it during those old school times, during Michael Jordan times sort of things, or during the Kobe era, early Kobe Bryant era. And now it's like, I don't know, soft, Ben. It's like I told you at the very beginning, there's a broader cultural thing that had been going on in this country. Everything's so nerfed. And hopefully it goes back the other way where we can be real men again.
Yeah, I think in terms of the NBA, I think Steph Curry kind of changed the game. And I actually saw like a heat map of where, you know, NBA players would most shoot from. And you see back in the day, you know, they would drive in and, you know, go hard and try and like dunk on fools. And now it's all three pointers and like close range shots or layups. There's no like, there's no mid range jumpers anymore. It's all just kind of soft, like you said, you know. But the other thing too, Gary, is I don't know if you saw this, the viewership for the MLS Cup final, I think it was like 400,000 or 480,000. I was like, wow, this is pretty sad that here in supposedly the biggest game of the year and not even a million people are tuning in.
Shocking, Ben. Shocking. The ratings have fallen off a cliff. And I'm not surprised. Like you and I spoke about this. I don't remember if it was in two episodes ago or something. I asked you, hey, are you watching the MLS Cup final? Do you know when it is? Do you know what time it is? And you're like, I kind of know it's Saturday, you know, and this is, you're a hardcore soccer guy, Benny, a hardcore soccer practitioner at that it's been in your blood for years. Nobody cares, Ben. Nobody cares. We also talked about how the kids don't care either. Nobody cares. This demo that we're talking about, the Latino, the immigrant, first generation immigrant, or hardcore soccer households here, a number in the millions, they could give a shit. They didn't tune in to know LA Galaxy versus New York Red Bulls. What the fuck is that? Doesn't matter at all. And folks here, again, the people in power, people in control, the primary demographic, the suburban, are like, oh, well, it's, you know, MLS is kind of struggling a little bit because of the Apple deal and the Apple paywall. And you kind of have to like have a subscription to Apple to watch all the games. Bro, when it was broadcast on network television, nobody cared. We don't care. The primary house, the soccer first households in this country don't give a shit about MLS. This is just a fact. And it's so crazy because anywhere else in the world, they care about their first division in soccer and they'll tune in. We could care less. And there's a reason for that. And now we can transition into the reason.
Just before you do, like one example of that, the first team that I ever coached, we all went to the Galaxy game. And I'm telling you, Gary, 90 minutes of the game and the kids maybe watched like 3 minutes of it. The other 87 minutes of the game, they're like playing games on their phone or eating popcorn or they're walking around the stadium to play the little mini games. Like they could give two fucks about the game that was going on, you know?
Yeah. And it's like, it's not just the kids. It's the parents or whoever is going, like 80% of the stadium, if you look at them, most of the time they're not even watching the game, Benny.
And everybody starts cheering and then they pick their head up. Oh, what happened?
Yeah. Yep. It's unbelievable, man. And people here cite folks, oh, look at huge attendance numbers. You know, we rival the best leagues in the world from attendance perspective. Yeah. But the product that is being sold is not soccer. The product that is being sold is a night out with your friends to have some beers or with the family to just get out of the house and do something together instead of going to a movie or dinner or barbecue. Let's just go to the Galaxy game, you know, and just hang out there for a while. I mean, that is what's being sold here. And the American in general has this enough disposable income. This particular demographic has enough disposable income to do that, you know, and that's what they do. And they're not going there for the sport. Absolutely not. They are not going there for the sport. Do you think the Hollywood actors and actresses or any of the celebrities or the modern day influencers who are filmed at an MLS game are there to watch the sport or watch the game or know who is on the roster? You think they can pick out everybody who's on the roster and what positions and their stats? They're not there for that.
The thing that always baffles me, Gary, like, for example, you go to the LAFC game and, you know, they have their whole like 3-2-5-2, the whole like fan section. Mm-hmm. But you see the people that are leading that and what are they watching? They're literally facing the fans the entire game and like not even watching 1 second of the game. Like that's crazy to me. You know, how can you call yourself a true soccer fan of the team and you're not even watching your own team play? Like I was fortunate enough to go to the Camp Nou and watch Barcelona play. And I was, you know, typical American mentality. I'm like, all right, I'll get into the stadium. I'll get a beer. And I don't know if it's still like this, Gary, but like they did not even sell beer inside of the stadium. Meaning like people aren't there to go and drink and have a good time. They're there to watch the game. And if you go like to the restroom mid-game, there's zero people on the concession line. Why? Because they're all so focused on the game. If you go here, it could be in the 85th minute. It's a close game. The concession line is around the corner, like people trying to buy popcorn.
Yeah, or the 23rd minute or the 69th minute. And there's just a swarm of people in the hallways outside the stadium, just walking around and like, what is going on here?
It's crazy, Gary. Crazy. I was so fortunate to like witness European environments. I also got to go to Roma versus Lazio and just the atmosphere and the feel. And you could tell that everybody cares out there. And, you know, that is their life. They want to support their team. Good times and bad times, they're going to be there. Not just cheering, but watching the game, dissecting the game. You hear the fans constantly ripping the players, right? In Italian or in Spanish. And I think it's just something that we lack here, Gary.
Yeah. Oh, well, Benny, Gary, come on. You're talking about countries that have 100-year history, you know, in soccer versus here it just started or something. Guys, you've been brainwashed. Okay. You have been brainwashed. Here in the United States, we also have a century of history of soccer, but we have failed soccer leagues because they're not open. They're closed and it just doesn't work. They're trying to do soccer here the way that soccer isn't done. You don't do soccer like the NBA or the NFL or hockey. It doesn't work that way, guys. That's one thing. Number two, about the culture thing, you can look at the other sports. You can look at and go to NBA. I've been to NBA games. Much of the same is happening. People aren't even watching the game. They're fucking around or in, you know, getting beers or hot dogs or nachos and, you know, having arguments or talking about, oh, my daughter's prom is coming up and we have to go shopping for the dress. And like, that's what they're doing. They're not tuned in. And this is basketball. What, do we not have a basketball culture? And if you look at European basketball, I'm sure you've seen some of the clips. Maybe we can throw one in here in the show too. The European basketball circuits over there have stadiums, first one that are full, and secondly, just like the soccer stadium, all the fans are bouncing up and down and yelling and chanting and tuned into the and watching the game with passion. They aren't there for a night out just to go and have some hot dogs and beer. So what is it? Do the United States has no basketball culture also, and they do have a basketball culture? Like, what's the reasoning? What's the reasoning? See, the rationale is broken here. People have been brainwashed to think, oh, well, we just don't have the culture for soccer here. Nonsense. That's not what it is. We have built a product that is anti-soccer culture. That is why you see what you see here. Ben, look, and the way I'm speaking about it, they don't like me. So I have a soccer culture. You are witnessing a soccer culture right now with the things that I say and the way that I say it. And guess what? They don't like me. They don't want me around. So they are anti-soccer culture, Ben.
Who in specific are you referring to? U.S. soccer in general?
Oh, Ben, I'm going to, eventually everything will be outlaid, but I'm not going to pinpoint individual names. I will keep it general. If you just think about MLS and you think about U.S. soccer, the folks who are elevated into positions of influence there are anti-soccer culture people. They're the ones that comply and kiss the ring and lick the boot and follow orders. They won't exhibit passion. They will be very bureaucratic. They'll be very political. And I understand in many respects, you have to do that for sure, but that is what they are. You know, and anybody who comes around demonstrating passion and has their own ideas and maybe wants to paint outside the lines a bit, they want nothing to do with it because it's a threat to them. But we should wrap it up, Ben. What else you got?
Well, you mentioned a little bit on promotion relegation, but maybe you could just touch a little bit more how the deficiency in the suburban American player could be improved through promotion or relegation.
Sure. I will make it quick, okay? And I'll keep it in the context of things that we've already discussed. Number one, you mentioned, oh, LAFC built like a futsal facility or some sort of facility nearby in the community or something like that. And I told you, oh, it's to a great degree a PR move and not a benevolent, let's develop players sort of move. But if there was promotion relegation, all the clubs would have a vested interest in developing players in their area for real, because you need them in order to survive, in order to develop the best players, get the best players so that you're not in relegation threat at that point, or that so that you can excel or get higher on the table. So they would have a genuine incentive to develop and maybe create futsal courts or different little patches or different areas in their neighboring community to develop the players in that community and have that pickup culture themselves. And the same thing goes for promotion relegation at the youth level. They would not filter out the abundance of players that can't pay to play. The youth clubs would figure it out. They would say, these players who can't pay, but they're really good, we need them for us to be able to get to the highest youth leagues in the country and not get relegated, or not get relegated from the highest youth leagues in the country. So they will do, they're incentivized, Benny. The incentives are aligned to develop their players along across every aspect. And one important aspect being the topic of today's discussion, which is pickup soccer. They would figure it out. But right now, without promotion relegation, nobody's incentivized to do these sorts of things.
Good stuff, Gary. I really like your idea that we talked about last week about maybe our next episode can be, you know, centered around, because we've been getting a lot of comments on these episodes. So maybe we can do a whole comments episode. So if anybody's listening and there's something specific that you want to ask, drop a comment, and maybe the next episode we're going through all the comments and responding.
Excellent. I love it, man. I love it. So yeah, go ahead and make some comments on the YouTube channel, on this episode or on prior episodes, whatever it is. We'll compile a list of those comments and then, yeah, we'll give it a go. And even if they're toxic comments, well, we will maybe have a toxic comment episode as well. No problem at all. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.